Okay, so today on the Loopcast, I have at Persian Kitten, and we're going to talk about fashion and, international relations and national security. Why is it important? Why isn't it important? And sort of, bring in examples from the real world, from people that, made it an emphasis to wear, to be bombastic in their dress and sort of in their image. So before we start, a little note. So I wanted to do this Loopcast because, as I'm here in DC and it's really popular, it's just something that happens always in DC is that whenever a woman politician is written about, inevitably what she wears always comes up. So because, NatSec and IR is a male dominated field, I thought today we could talk about, what not to wear, what to wear, as men and women, participate in, the crafting of national security and what have you. So my first question is, why is fashion important? Why is what we wear and sort of how we present ourselves, important? Like, why should national security people look at fashion, in addition to issues of security?
Okay. Hello.
Hi.
Here I am, everyone.
Yeah.
Here to answer the most pressing questions about fashion.
So, I mean, why do you think is fashion's important?
Why is well, it's important because it sends a message, especially about depending on the country, it sends a clear message to the people about where they're at that moment in time as far as the leader goes. And especially with, if it's not a democracy, if it's a dictatorship, you can definitely see where the mindset of that dictator is. A lot of these, I mean, most dictators are notoriously narcissistic, so you can definitely see the narcissism in them. Based on their, way of dress. One of those clear examples is Gaddafi and the way he just evolved as time went on. He started out in military fatigues. He was a military man. And that's the way he started his career. And it just got more and more bizarre as time went on. Another example is Saddam Hussein. He was not a military man. Like you told me, he came up with the Ba'ath Party. And he actually tried to get into military school at 18 and did not pass the test. He flunked the test and was really devastated. But when he ascended to power, he was seen so many places wearing military fatigues and military outfits, outfitted in medals and, I mean, everywhere, all over the place. There was posters of him. And different military gear and outfit. I mean, everywhere he went, you would think that he started in the military until you did some reading. So it is a lot about their narcissism. It is about what they're trying to convey to people, about how vulnerable they're feeling, how much attention they feel they need. Gaddafi got to the point with his fashion where other world leaders were literally trying to get out of the picture with him. That's how ridiculous it got. I mean, really, if you look at pictures of him, it would just got awkward, towards the end. And then in a democracy for men, they don't want to really play it up. They don't really want their fashion to be that out there. And that is the reason why, especially from the time of, Jacqueline Kennedy, where they saw that, their wife could be used as that, kind of person that people go to for fashion. And that is a great part of it. Before that, it was people like Mamie Eisenhower, where she wasn't really a fashion plate. She was a very motherly figure, but she wasn't exactly a fashion plate. When Jackie Kennedy came on the picture and she came on the scene, it became like this whole marketing tool that not only were people looking to her for fashion, but fashion industry insiders were looking to Jackie Kennedy as a way to sell things. And the politicians learned. They learned that they can take that attention off themselves and they can use their wives as, that's why you see a lot of female politicians, you know, and male politicians, they know that their wives are going to get that attention. They don't really mind it, I don't think, or else they wouldn't allow their wives to carry Birkin bags, because everybody knows how much a Birkin bag costs. Everybody knows how much, you know, a Chanel suit costs. So you're not going to let your wife carry that bag or wear that Chanel suit unless you know she's going to get that attention, you know? So they're going to stay low-key. They're going to wear a suit that's going to be really subdued. It's going to be a complementary color, like navy blue, or, you know, like a some kind of blue or grayish suit that's just going to kind of let them say their piece, and no one's going to really look at their, like, flamboyant tie or, you know, pinstripe suit. You're not going to see that on a politician in D.C. because they don't want people talking about their suit. They want them talking about their speech, what they have to say.
That makes sense. So. But it seems like in a dictatorship, though, like, because really, you know, in a democracy, you're people are going to be concerned about the content of your speech and, you know, the content of your policy, where, like, you make this great point with Saddam, like, he was trying to convey strength. Like, you know, like, by wearing a military outfit when, you know, in reality, he's not a military man. And so, right. sort of talk to us about, you know, if as a dictator, you know, you're dependent on what you wear, does what you wear change to that audience?
Does it change to your audience? Absolutely. I mean, I'm sure you know that better than I do. It definitely does change to their audience. And it can become very conflicting at times, depending on who we're talking about. I mean, there was Gaddafi and his tent, and then he's wearing Louis Vuitton shades. I mean, come on, let's get, you know, where are your priorities? Like, are you trying to be this humble figure? Or, I mean, really, let's pick a side. And then there's Saddam Hussein, where he would be seen in the traditional, like, you know, Kurdish outfit. And then depending on, you know, he had a personality cult, so, like, quote unquote, when he was the leader of Iraq. There were thousands of posters of him all over Iraq, and depending on the province that the poster was put up in, the costume that he was portrayed in would change. It would become, you know, very ingratiating towards that audience. It would play up to that audience that you know, that place the poster was put up in. If it was going to be an audience where it was, you know, very clannish and it was too, the place where he grew up in, he knew exactly what kind of outfit should be shown in that, you know, place. But if it was more westernized, he'd be wearing a suit. He'd be wearing a western suit and tie. When he was captured and he was showing up in court, he stopped wearing a tie. When they interviewed his tailor, who was still making his suit, a man by the name of, I believe, Ian Trainer, he said that he couldn't wear ties in court because of safety reasons. They wouldn't allow them to wear ties. I did a little bit more research. I found out, no, in fact, they do let them wear ties. They make, you know, an exception and do let them wear ties for court. He chose not to as a defiance against, you know, Western culture, but he did wear a Western suit. When he found out, around the time he found out that he was going to be judged by a jury of his peers, he ditched the suit and went for what's known as a dish, called a dishdasha. I believe I'm saying it right. Yeah, it's called a dishdasha. It's a blue caftan. And it was traditional, you know, it was traditional costume for where he was from. And he did that on purpose. You know, they know how vulnerable they are. They're trying to convey power, but you see their outfits and you see the closer they got to the brink, the more outlandish the outfits would get. And the more, you know, they would try and ingratiate themselves to their audience. They knew exactly what they were doing, and they knew how to say a lot without even opening their mouths. And the first thing you do, these people knew exactly what they were doing, was to pick the right outfit. So Saddam Hussein putting on a blue caftan when he walks into court, when he knows he's going to be judged by a jury of his peers, is him trying to ingratiate himself to his audience.
But, I mean, I think... Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
No, I'm looking at pictures right now, and I think I'll put these up so on the in the slideshow when I publish this podcast. I've noticed though, like, you make a really good point. Like, you know, Saddam is very well. He doesn't have a tie. You know, he's very much, you know, looks like his peers, right? But then the people around him though look very much like so basically his trial, he was tried with other people. So other people in his regime. And so it's very interesting that, you know, the people around him that he was being tried with look like Sunni tribesmen, you know, as opposed to, you know, they look more Bedouin as opposed to more sort of, you know, Shia or, you know, whatever sectarian distinction. So I think you hit on something really good because,
you know, he changed. At the very beginning, he was very Western in his dress. Mm-hmm. At some point, and I believe it was December, I mean, when a trial started in February, and by December or something, he had changed his outfit. They went to a dishdasha, and people were perplexed at first. And I believe it was Robin Given of the Washington Post. And at first she said that the suits were a bid for global approval. And when he changed his to the caftan, it was his, she said that it was Saddam's way of signaling solidarity with anti-Western Islamists. And by standing trial in the traditional robe of Arab nomads, it was a shrewd fashion move, you know, for him of, you know, saying that, like, I stand with you guys. It was a little too late, you know.
Right.
You can't change teams, you know, in the middle of the game, but he didn't know at the very beginning who was going to be judging him. They let him know halfway through. At some point, he realized what was going on. So,
like, you bring up a lot of good points because, like, the more I think about Iraq, like, so now that we're having this conversation, I'm thinking more and more about Iraq, and I think, like, the way that sort of Saddam before he was arrested and tried. The way he constructed his fashion, like, it really felt, you know, falls in with the idea that he was trying to create, you know, nationalism, sort of in the sense that, you know, we're not Sunni, we're not Shia, we are Iraqi and we are Arab. And so, you know, the idea that a military...
And you all need to love me. You all need to love me.
Yeah, yeah.
And on top of it all, just, you all need to love me. You know, we're all Sunni, we're all Shia, and you all need to love me. I mean, all these dictators have that, you know, kind of complex that they just need to be loved badly. I mean, they all just badly try to ingratiate themselves, and they do use fashion. They definitely use fashion.
Like, Saddam is the father of the nation. Like, he's the military. Like, you know what I mean? Like, he's always trying... Like, in the pictures, he's always trying to portray himself as very masculine, very military, very, you know.
Exactly. Like,
mm-hmm. So let's switch a little to Gaddafi, because I think, like, Saddam was kind of normal in terms of, like, the clothes he wore. Kind of. I say kind of, right? Because dictators. Anyway.
Gaddafi was so much fun to research. I have never laughed so hard researching anything in my life. I mean, it was scary at some point, but it was... I mean, Reagan dubbed him the Mad Dog of the Middle East. So So let's just take it from there. I mean, where is it going to go from there? But it got progressively worse throughout the year.
Right. And
it just, he started out with military fatigues. He looked really normal. And as the years went on, and if you do a slideshow, I actually sent you a link, but I'm going to resend the link to you. There was an actual slideshow done of the progression of the insanity of his fashion throughout the year. As the years went by, it just got crazier. And really, you see other world leaders either just looking at him with this like incredulous look on their face, or trying to dodge being in a picture with him. Like, they're just trying, they have this like painful look on their face, like, why do I have to stand next to this guy? And actually, he really thought he was working the floor. He really thought he had it all. He had plans for 2013, by the way. Every year the Costume Institute has this, there's a major fashion-based exhibit at the Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York. And every year it's about somebody. One year it was about Alexander McQueen. Another year it was about American women. And a few years ago, they got a letter. I sent you a copy of the letter, actually. I'll send you the link again, the actual letter. It was so hilarious. It was like a 6-page letter, and it was for 2013. It was sent from, they sent it to, they said last month we were talking about it, and we wanted to make a bid to have Mr. Gaddafi's clothes be exhibited at the Met, for you to honor him at the Met. So basically, like, take his clothes and make an exhibit out of it. And they said, Michael Jackson, he's inspired many world leaders, let alone world leaders. He even inspired the fashions of Michael Jackson in the late 80s. And it's like, who wants to take credit for that, really? I mean, like, the military fashions of Michael Jackson in the late 80s. Like, really? You really want to go there? But I mean, he was just, those are his plans for 2013, to be honored at the Met Gala.
I mean, sorry. Go ahead. I was looking at the Google images of Gaddafi's, like, wear. Like, it's very interesting. Like, he goes from, like, to your point again, like, depending on who he's talking to, he switches clothes. So, like, when he's talking to a military audience, he's in military fatigues. And, okay, so for those who are listening, you know, when I say he's dressed as a military man, it's flashy. Like, it's really just sort of gaudy and sort of, you know, somebody has opened up the hose of purple and pink and really, like, insane colors. But, like, he switches fashions. Like, when he sort of talks to sort of African nations, or, you know, is in front of a primarily African audience, he dresses in a sort of very stereotypical African way. And then when he talks to an Arab audience, he's in a military outfit. And so it's very this interesting sort of use of clothing. I mean, to be sure, he's super flashy, and he's, you know, his color, like the color scheme of his clothes is just like crazy. Like, I mean,
he had some faux pas too. He actually went to, he had a diplomatic trip in June of 2008, and he pinned to his chest a figure of a Libyan resistance fighter who was hanged by Italian colonialists in 1931. And at an Italian news conference, they asked him about the picture, and he said, and this is a diplomatic trip, he says, for us, that image is like the cross some of you wear. And he said, referencing Jesus Christ's crucifixion. I mean, so where some leaders will try and ingratiate themselves, he was still trying to be the rebel, you know, even up until 08. He was trying to say, like, I'm still trying to say some revolutionary things here. And it was so awkward the way he did it. I even have a picture of it. It was like he was wearing a military outfit, and then he just awkwardly pinned this do-it-yourself picture on top of it.
I see that.
Yeah, like, you see that?
Yeah, I'm looking at Vanity Fair had a great piece on Gaddafi's fashion, and it's for those at home, it's, you know, Gaddafi's in a very Sergeant Pepper's, very exaggerated military dress with, like, you know, epaulets that are like gold and black. But he's walking with Berlusconi, the Prime Minister of Italy, and he has this picture, like, pinned, like, it's a very big picture pinned on his chest, and it's just like, that's kind of weird. Like, it's not really.
Notes they would put on our shirts at kindergarten, remember, when we would go home to say, like, you know, she didn't eat her snack today.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, those sort of things. It's like, don't give this guy cocaine. Something like that. Like, it's just so awkward.
I mean,
do not let this guy do any drugs. Like, it's like that. It's just, it's so, what is that on you? Like, it's so, he wanted to be asked about this, obviously, you know, but it's so childish. It's so immature and juvenile the way it's done. And, you know, it was just towards the end, it was a little, more than a little unhinged. And Reagan got it right 20 plus years ago when he called them the mad dog of the Middle East. I mean, really. And he was very unhinged. You just saw it in the way his clothes just got worse and worse. And then when he went to the UN a few years ago and was talking for like over an hour and a half and called Obama his son, his outfit there was just off the wall. It was, yeah.
It's crazy. But I'm curious then, like, you know, how much with fashion, you know, how much of it is, like, with Gaddafi, do you think he was rebelling? Like, sort of, you know, throwing it in the face of, like, diplomats? Or do you think, like, he's really sort of, he doesn't really give a damn, and he's just, you know, he's really, you know, crazy? Because it seems like...
I think he was a little unhinged. I think there was a lot of drugs involved there, honestly. Just like some celebrities. I'm not kidding. I really, I think that has, I mean, look at him. And then there's also that I think he was trying to be a rebel. And I think he became somewhat irrelevant towards the end of, you know, his reign. And he wanted to be relevant and he wanted to be noticed. And, you know, they want to remain kind of cool. You know, dictators want to remain cool. There's a lot of black hair dye involved, by the way, in being a dictator. You got to notice that, too. If you haven't noticed, in a democracy, your hair turns gray very quickly. In a 4-year term, you go from dark hair to gray very quickly. It's like in a flash. But in a dictatorship, the hair gets oddly darker. It just turns to an eerie shade of black. Kim Jong-il, you know, Gaddafi, Mubarak, every single one of them, if you look at their hair, it's like they where is it? There was like mass shipments of like black hair dye being sent to all these countries, and they were like sharing their secrets with each other because it was like the same shade. So they wanted to remain relevant. They didn't want to get old, and they wanted to remain, like, you know, they didn't want it to seem like they had been getting older and getting, you know, crushed by this responsibility, because even if they had been, you know, not doing a great job at what they were given to do, they were still responsible to do it. They didn't want to seem like they were getting crushed by the responsibility of their job. So I mean, there's a lot of black hair dye involved in being a dictator.
Do you think it's more sort of in the West, you know, in the United States, it's people accept your age. Like, if you get older, it's not about your, you know, if you get older on the job, it's not about your age. It's about how competent you are. Whereas, like, with Mubarak, Gaddafi, and Saddam, and Kim Jong-il, like, it seems to be, as you get older, you appear weaker, and that's when the sort of wolves and sort of your opposition comes out. Do you know what I mean? Like, it really seems like age for a dictator is a liability. So that's why they,
You
dye
know
their
what?
hair. Oh, go. What?
That's Shot Doggo, isn't it? That's awesome. I hear Shot Doggo. So I think that it has to do with the fact that America is a relatively younger country, and showing their age is a good thing. And showing that you have, been aged by your position is not necessarily a bad thing. It's okay, to show that you've been doing hard work. It's something we're proud of, But in a dictatorship, in a country that's, been around for thousands of years, you want to look young. You want to look modern. You want to look up to date. So when you travel to these countries, you see how much they strive to be relevant, and they try to stay modern. And so showing their age is definitely, yeah, you're right. It's definitely something that they try very, very hard not to do. Showing the cracks of time is a sign of weakness in any way, shape, or form. And of course you're going to cover the grave because it's a sign of weakness. It's not seen as like the way we see it here, where, look, I've been doing hard work. I'm working here. I may not be perfect, but you can tell I've been trying. So, and plus they're on the job a lot more. I mean, here it's maximum 8 years. There, Gaddafi served for like, what, 42 years.
Yeah.
It's a different story.
My lifetime plus 15 is what I like to
Yeah.
say. Like he basically served for a Sina and then 15 more years.
Yeah.
It is crazy. I mean, like, can we extend fashion not just to what we wear, but like how we live? Like, it seems like Saddam, like I remember during like in the beginning of the 2003 Iraq War, like when they were going through his palaces. That's plural. Like, he lived in these really opulent marble, gold. Like, what is how a dictator lives tell us about, I mean, I think that, let me ask this first. Does sort of fashion extend to, interior design? Do we consider that
Oh,
sort of one spectrum? And then, what can we infer about, how somebody's living? Like, it seems like Saddam and Gaddafi, Mubarak, Kim Jong-il, they all live in these really sort of, super palaces, like just insanely
another
opulent. But I mean, like, what does that tell us? I mean,
it's what it tells us is, well, going to Saddam first, because I actually did some research and it was really fascinating. There was when they first went to look at, they demanded to see those places in 2003. They went to Al Sajoud. It was one of the palaces. And one of the journalists that went with them said this, and I quote, it says, "The lavish decor and the enormous size of the palaces seems to fit the gargantuan ego of the president, who has his portrait displayed in hundreds of public places across Baghdad." And across the while they were being ushered out of Al Sajoud, there's this huge foyer, and across each wall there was poems that were written in gold. On each wall, and inscribed in gold, one of the poems that sang the praises of Saddam said, "You are the glory." And it's just like, can you imagine walking into one of your many palaces, which he wouldn't stay in any of the palaces for? All of the palaces had to stay completely on point. They never knew when he was going to show up. And but they always had to have everything ready, like he was going to be there any minute. And can you imagine walking into the foyer of your house and it says, "You are the praise, you are the glory of this country, not just of this home, but this country in which you live." I mean, what does that do for someone's ego? So it definitely, it just says something about, like, you know, how much they needed that reinforcement and how much they just, their ego was just so inflated. It was just ridiculous. It went past the posters, past the outfits, into their, you know, haven, and their, the people that live with them had to live with it. They, it's not just them walking into that house. It's other people. It's their family members. It's their guests. It's their, you know, it's a lot of people that have to live there and read that Saddam is the glory, you know? So.
That's kind of, that's awful. Like, Saddam is the glory every time in Arabic that you walk into the house.
Imagine being his wife and being really angry with him one day, like walking in and having to read that. You know, you just would be just like, no. Well, you can't say anything because it's just, if you do, you're going to be the next one gone. You know, it's like on to the next. So right. It's just a test of character, too, for everyone living in that house. How much they can hold their tongue, I guess. Anyways. All of them had these houses. All of them had several houses. All of them had crazy, tacky houses too. We don't know what Kim Jong-il's house looks like, really. But we do know what Gaddafi's houses look like. Really, really tacky artwork. I mean, for all the money they had and everything they could have attained, they could have done with better artwork, really. Just really cheesy stuff out of like romantic art, like romantic novels, you know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. Guys machine guns and the girl just like lying there in a bikini type thing. It was just stuff like that that they found on the walls. And of course, just seriously gilded furniture, heavily gilded gold furniture. And it says a lot about them needing that kind of stuff. It's like, you know, they definitely needed reinforcement. It's just, and they were very paranoid. It wasn't just one or two houses. It was several. Gaddafi had an underground tunnel built. And he almost escaped, and his sons almost escaped through that underground tunnel built all the way to the airport. So he was ready. He had a plan of action in place for the day that something like this would occur for him. They almost escaped through that tunnel, by the way. So
let's switch a little to not the fashion of dictators, but, you know, the fashion of individuals. How has sort of national security themes and like ideas affected, you know, what an individual wears? I mean, you brought up this in our conversation before we started recording. You brought up the University of Pennsylvania researcher who's come up with anti-drone wear, or what was it?
It's called drone wear, and he's come up with a few things, actually. He came up with, before that, I came up with something called CV Dazzle, and it's camouflage from computer vision. And then he said the name is derived from a type of camouflage that was used during World War I called Dazzle. And it was used to break apart the gestalt image of warships, making it hard to discern their directionality and their size and orientation. And likewise, he said the goal of that CV Dazzle is to break apart the gestalt of a face or object and make it undetectable to computer vision algorithms in particular face detection. And the drone wear pieces he made, two pieces of the drone wear pieces he made are inspired by Muslim dress, the burqa and the scarf. And then he also has a hoodie. He has several other garments that that are anti-genre, and it's made, it was launched in January of this year in London. It's called Droneware. It's called Droneware or Stealthware, depending on which publication you read.
I think
the guy's name is Adam Harvey.
Yeah, and, I'm on his website right now, and it's some crazy designs, like.
Yeah, crazy designs, and he hadn't, at the time of press, he hadn't even set a price for it yet, but he just said, not going to be cheap. And they asked him what his, he's kind of got a sense of humor about it. They said, what's your target market? And he said the paranoid individual, like the tech paranoid individual, or the drone, like the person that's like paranoid about the, you know, security of today, like, you know, someone that's worried about drones or their phone being tracked. Because he also made a cell phone pouch that was, it's made of a special signal debilitating material, and this pouch allegedly blocks your phone signal, so it can't be tracked or intercepted by there's something called a Stingray that the FBI uses, a Stingray tool. So this blocks, you put your cell phone in this pouch, and it's supposed to block the device, the Stingray device that the FBI uses to track your phone. And he's made a lot of stuff like that. He's very vague as far as what is exactly in this material, and he has the right to be, because he came up with it. He doesn't want to exactly give out his, you know, recipe for his material. But he is making it, and he's selling it, and I'm sure people are buying it. Yeah, it's out there.
People
can buy drones and cell phone pouches, huh?
My guess on the drone wear, do you know if you go to like a convenience store or a gas station, like they have the pouches, or no, carry out food, like, you know, like Domino's, they have that new, like, not new, but new-ish, like where it's like a pouch that you put your pizza in and it keeps it warm while the guy delivers it. I think that's what the anti-drone material is. Like, it's,
he said it's a metallized material designed to counter thermal imaging.
Yeah. It's,
so should we buy all those things from Domino's or whatever and just make our own hoodies and sell it for half price?
Pretty much. It's definitely, I think the guy Adam Harvey definitely has like a flair for design, because it's definitely like his, I'll put his website up when we when I publish it, but it, like, his design is very much influenced, like, I don't want to say Islamic, but it's like it borrows from, as you said, like the burqa, and it's very much, but then like the sort of top three designs he shows is influenced by the burqa, and then the bottom ones, like, he has a, I don't know what this is, it's like a, what?
Go ahead, which piece are you looking at?
The one that is like a hoodie midriff.
Yeah, that hoodie midriff. I was like, so how much of yourself do you want to cover with this?
I know, like I just wonder, like, if somebody is using this to avoid drones, like, A, yeah, what's preventing them from being photographed as opposed to detected with, you know, thermal imaging? And then some point, like, like, you need to cover your whole body, like.
Yeah, at some point you would need like a drone stealthwear bodysuit, I would think.
Yeah.
If you really want to go there, let's just be, you know, let's just call it out. This is not going to do the job, you know. You're just going to have to walk around wearing a bodysuit of this thing all day long, just to be on the safe side. It's just, that's just, and he really feeds off of that paranoia. Because he said that's his target market, is that paranoid tech firm. He says, and this is to quote him, he says, military technology is coming home from war. And these pieces are designed, and he's referring to growing use of spy drones across the United States. These pieces are designed to live with it, to cope with it, to live in a world where surveillance is happening all the time. I mean, he is really feeding off of that paranoia. He's just really selling to that public who, you will see somebody who's that paranoid walking around with that hoodie. And you'll be like, there's that stealthware, you know? Because someone will just get to that point of paranoia. Once there's enough news out there, you know, someone will just casually walk by with a stealthware hoodie one day. And you'll know what it is.
But I mean, like, I think nationals, like, you're right, like, a lot of it is fueled by paranoia, and I think, like, a lot of, like, our clothing decisions is fueled by sort of national, like, themes in national security. Like, I think, like, 20 years ago, or maybe even 15 years ago, it was fashionable to wear Che Guevara on a t-shirt, you know, as a way to rebel against capitalism. Like, I mean, I think when Rage Against the Machine was starting, they had no qualms about using sort of Soviet, like, imagery and sort of the image of Che Guevara and sort of promoting their brand. And I think, like, Adam Harvey is, like, the sort of extension of that, you know. Instead of the Soviets or communism, it's now drones and stealthware.
Yeah, he's really working this whole drone thing. He's the only, so far, as far as Joneswear goes, where he's gone there, and he's the only one so far, really. And I'm sure he's making a lot of money. Because he says, on one end, because he calls himself an artist, he says it's concept art, and but then again, it can also be worn, and it has practical use. So he plays two ends of the spectrum there. You know what I'm saying? He's definitely, he's a very smart individual. Whoever he is, he's definitely working his brand on different markets.
Oh, this is, so I'm exploring his website a little. He has a makeup called CV Dazzle.
Yeah, I just told you about that.
Oh, I'm sorry. I just... Now that you've got me hooked on Droneware, now I'm looking at CV Dazzle, and it's quite possibly go ahead.
The one that's based, I just told you, the one that's it was named after a camouflage used in World War One. Yeah.
Sorry. That's cool.
Okay, I sent you a link to it too. It's crazy, isn't it? It's nuts. I was just like, whoa, this is
like, okay, I think drone wear is kind of stupid. Like, it's just wearing aluminum foil, but this is, like, cool because he's literally, like, I'll put the link up on the website because I think everybody has to see this. Like, it's literally messing with, like, the computer program that reads your face.
This one is a little bit more sophisticated.
Yeah.
It's a little bit more sophisticated. And CB Dazzle, that's why I mentioned it first, too, because it was, it's definitely like more sophisticated than the drone wear, but he's definitely working several markets, and he's really feeding into that paranoid market. That's for sure.
Definitely, wow. I'm just kind of hoping that sort of the more mainstream makeup companies like MAC or I don't really know any more makeup companies other than MAC because it's in the mall and then I pass by it.
MAC is cool. MAC is in the mall. It's got like a, they also have loud music and a cool booth always. So I get why you would remember MAC.
But no, I'm waiting for them to sort of pick up the drone and the facial detection avoidance. Like I'm just waiting for all of it to be mainstreamed.
It could happen. Then again, it could be years and years away. And then again, it could maybe possibly never be picked up. I mean, who wants to be that paranoid about stuff like this? But some people are. And it may be just like a sub-market. I don't know. Maybe Mac might do something like that, but they would have to ensure that it works, and to ensure that it works would cost a lot of money, you know?
No, you're absolutely right, because like the sense I get from this guy's work, like I'm just going through his website and it seems like it's more like I want to say like from a business perspective, it seems like more niche, and then at the same time it strikes me as more of an art project, like the intersection of art and communication as opposed to fashion that you and I could wear and sort of use in our daily lives.
He presents it that way for sure, and there's a reason why he does it that way, is because he's trying to kind of work his way out. He's kind of putting an escape route for himself, because if you present it as art, then it can be just, kind of, then it can be just not something that you're supposed to really use. It can just be something that you're supposed to look at and not take seriously, really. You know what I'm saying? And that can be his way to kind of edge out of any kind of responsibility when he calls it art. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Do you
But
think?
people mainstream with it would be a lot more responsibility on the part of a major company.
Do you think he's trying to make a comment though? Like it almost seems like the
It's a statement.
comment, like the idea, like he's commenting against, you know, how, you know, drones, the usage of, you know, the popular image of drones or the popular image of sort of modern surveillance. Like it almost seems like his website
Yeah,
is.
he definitely.
Oh, go
Yeah,
ahead.
he's got. No, go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say, like it almost seems more. It almost seems like a more complex performance piece as opposed to, like, I don't think I would ever buy or wear any of this. Like it just seems so. Like the point is to make a sort of political point and an artistic point as opposed to fashion. Like you know what I mean? Like it's really more complex. His work is more complex than that, maybe.
I think he has definitely presented it in a way so that in its simplicity it can still be somewhat complex, so that he can sell it and people would wear it, and then some people will just buy it and it can be considered a piece of art. Some people will, some designers like to be vague, and the reason why is because they want people to, impress upon it what they will, because they want to sell. And this guy seems to want to sell. He's just got that mentality where, see what you want in this. If you want to use it as something that, a defense mechanism, like kind of thing, where you're going to use this and really use it and you feel safer using it, go ahead. But if you are going to like hold me really responsible, I have that place where I can say this is a concept piece and it was just supposed to have that idea of protecting yourself against, but it wasn't really supposed to be taken seriously. You know what I'm saying? He just
Yeah.
seems to have kind of tried to play this kind of, it's like a conceptual piece. Some people are going to take it really seriously and they're going to buy it and use it that way. Some people are gonna look like stand back and look at it for a minute like you are and be like, this doesn't really like add up. It's just,
Right.
I can't use this really. Let's be real. But some people are really actually gonna buy it and use it.
So, I think we sort of we've covered everything. So I'm curious, like, do you have any sort of last words or last comments before we sort of close out the conversation?
It's been a pleasure, and in case you ever have the responsibility of becoming dictator of a country, don't use black hair dye.
Okay. Well, thank you so
It.
much for coming on. Thank you.
Thank you.